So again, if there are additional questions related to the establishment of the committee, you know, can feel free to ask in the open forum portion. Thank you guys for your presentation. The final current issue that we will be addressing stems from the law enforcement discussion. As everyone knows, this is an important issue for the community, obviously. We had a meeting, I believe it was October 6th, at the American Legion Hall with the Sheriff Downey and members of his organization, police force. And we were a bit taken aback and put off that he would, in fact, not engage directly with the tribal council in setting up those meetings or setting up those open forums. But nonetheless, it happened. At that meeting, I read a statement on behalf of the tribal council. And if I can, I just would take the opportunity to read the statement again. And then if there are further questions related to law enforcement, again, we're here to answer any of those. So law enforcement issues are some of the most important issues that will find its way into every home and life of the tribal members, as well as other Indians and non-Indians within the boundaries of the Hoo Valley Indian Reservation and surrounding communities. While it's critical that we fix our present-day law enforcement issues, we must also know the history and factors that caused them in the first place if we are going to be successful in providing solutions. Public Law 280 came to the Hooper Reservation in 1953 when Congress passed the law during the federal termination era and essentially transferred legal authority or civil and criminal jurisdiction from federal to state jurisdiction over reservation Indians. The termination era ended the U.S. government recognition of sovereignty of tribes through policies with the single intention of integrating Native people into mainstream American society. One example of how the termination policies directly affected the Hoopa tribe was the elimination of the original Hoopa Hospital. While Congress and the federal government addressed the devastating effects of the loss of our hospital by reestablishing health care in California in the early 1970s, law enforcement problems have lingered for decades longer, and with ongoing jurisdictional issues, it remains a problem today. In 2010, the Hoopa tribe supported the passage of the Tribal Law and Order Act, which included Section 221, which directed the federal government, upon the request of a tribe, to reestablish federal law enforcement, just as they did with health care. 3 years ago, the Hoopa tribe made the request for concurrent federal jurisdiction under Section 221 with the Department of Justice. Unfortunately, things have lingered far too long without progressive movement, and as a result, we are facing the myriad of problems that we have today. Upon my taking office as chairman following the first general membership meeting, the tribal members made it clear to me and the council that we needed to address law enforcement as our top priority. We have taken this directive seriously. We have taken many critical steps forward in acting on this priority. Today, I am pleased to announce that for the first time since 1953, we have an agreement with the Bureau of Indian Affairs to deputize qualified Hoopa police officers as federal officers under a special law enforcement commission. This SLEC, as it's commonly known, agreement reestablished a critical partnership between the tribe and the Bureau of Indian Affairs and also establishes federal tort claims protections over certain Hoopa law enforcement activities. Our partnership with the BIA will result in federal reviews and technical support for Hoopa law enforcement issues and links the Hoopa tribe's law enforcement activities with every other Bureau of Indian Affairs law enforcement program in the nation. With this agreement and the SLEC in place, we have broken down the barriers that have prevented this kind of federal-tribal relationship since the termination era over 60 years ago. The next step in our ongoing federal negotiations is to bridge the relationship between the tribe and the Department of Justice to secure a permanent working partnership under the Section 221 of the Tribal Law and Order Act. This HOOPA federal partnership will tie our law enforcement activities into the same federal support system that every tribe and Indian reservation has in current non-PL 280 states. The HOOPA tribe is diligently working toward being only the second tribe in the nation to secure federal concurrent jurisdiction through an agreement with the United States. While these are huge accomplishments for the tribe, they are largely legal procedures on the federal level. They still do not get more tribal officers on the ground to protect our families, property, and discourage or prevent crime on the reservation. In order to address this current need, on October 12th, Tribal Council will approve our 2016 tribal budget. Included in this new budget will be an enhanced benefits package, as well as a great increase in the pay scale for HOOPA tribal police officers. This will not only increase interest for new recruits, but also reduce employee turnover that has plagued HOOPA tribal police for years. I have been informed that such an increase, along with the associated benefits package, will immediately bring additional trained tribal member police officers back into our program. Folks who have left but didn't necessarily want to leave have a renewed interest in returning back to our tribal police program. We also currently have 5 tribal members in the police academy that will be graduating in December. Once trained, we'll have 9 officers patrolling HOOPA again, greatly enhancing our ability to protect our reservation. We're also aggressively pursuing qualified and effective sergeants and lieutenants, as well as a chief of police to lead tribal police to again being a leader in Indian country. At full capacity, Hoop Valley Tribal Police will strive to maintain 12 to 14 officers on staff, maintaining 24/7 coverage on the reservation. Once fully staffed, the HOOPA Tribal Police Department must address the most glaring issue affecting the HOOPA Valley, which is drug abuse and the associated crimes that go along with such activity. We know that we must take our responsibilities to address drug addiction and associated socioeconomic problems in HOOPA. The tribe has been determined in developing the new, which was presented earlier, HOOPA Comprehensive Economic Development Strategic Plan. And I'm hopeful that once implemented and incorporated into the tribe, that it will help in recycling money and rebuilding our local economy. Providing jobs is one of the most effective aftercare programs that we can possibly have. And by utilizing SEDS, as well as other economic development strategies, the HOOPA tribe may finally begin to turn the corner in addressing the HOOPA drug problems and associated criminal issues. We are currently working with Darren Cruzan, the Director of the Office of Justice Services and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, who has agreed to bring a corrective action support team, also known as a CAST, to conduct a top-to-bottom review of the existing infrastructure of the HOOPA Valley Tribal Police Department, which includes reviewing policies and procedures, budgetary evaluations, and personnel reviews. This CAST review will provide a framework for the Tribal Council to move forward in the restructuring of the HOOPA Tribal Police Department. In an effort to ensure that the HOOPA Valley Tribal Police Department reestablishes itself in a positive and sustainable entity, HOOPA Tribal Council and the Chairman's Office will continue to look at all possible avenues, including the pursuit of additional annual federal funding, maintaining an effective relationship with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of Justice, and keeping a clear line of communication with our local, state, and county police counterparts, including the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. During this tumultuous time, I'm asking all tribal members and other members of our community to please help keep things from veering off course in a negative direction during this time of transition. I am asking that we help one another during this unprecedented action of revoking tribal authority to enforce state law, so that we have the time and resources to reestablish our Hoopa Valley Tribal Police Department to best meet our needs as a community. This is our community, and only we can find the solutions that best meet our needs and secures our sovereign authority, the ability to govern ourselves. I've assigned full-time tribal staff to focus entirely on finding the solutions regarding law enforcement until we get past our current crisis issue on both the local and federal front. The tribal council, and I think we've all pointed this out, is disappointed in Sheriff Downey. And the fact that he's chosen to look in a different direction other than the Hoopa tribal government to address our law enforcement issues. However, I'm not going to let these kinds of smaller actions take our focus off of the positive and sustainable things that we have already put in place and continue to work toward. There are solutions to the issues we are facing as a community in both law enforcement and the underlying socioeconomic instability. But they will take hard work, consistent with the directive of the tribal membership to fix our Hoopa law enforcement issues. I, along with my dedicated staff, will not stop until we are finished, and we once again have a law enforcement department in Hoopa that we can rely on and have pride in. Again, that was just a statement that was made several nights ago. It was mostly directed at the community, but as well as the Humboldt County Sheriff. Obviously, we find ourselves in a difficult situation with our law enforcement program. We've never seen this type of lack of law enforcement authority. I guess we've obviously not had the deputization agreement forever, but most of us here, have come to enjoy the fact that our tribal officers, whether it's enjoy might not be the right word, but have at least had the ability to rely on tribal officers and the tribal police program. The fact that that's not here currently is obviously a problem, and that's something that the tribal council is taking seriously. I'm taking it seriously. We are working diligently to try and reestablish criminal jurisdiction here on the reservation. Again, we've reached out to our federal partners and are close to or have received word that an SLAC deputization agreement will be forthcoming, and that will allow our officers to have federal criminal jurisdiction. The sheriff at the meeting several nights ago indicated that he's still open to a deputization agreement between the tribe and the county. We think that we can, upon rebuilding, our police force can enter into another agreement to allow for our officers to have state peace officer authority. If that doesn't in fact happen, that's not necessarily the end of the world for us. We will continue to establish federal jurisdiction, federal criminal jurisdiction on the reservation. We will still continue to hire police officers. We'll continue to build our program back up to levels that we all come to expect. Last night, just for an update, it was the final piece to the overall tribal budget. We've worked now for a number of months to come to an agreement on the tribal budget, and the final piece to that was establishing a tribal police department program budget. And our commitment is to provide a level of service here for the community that we expect. And I'm pleased to announce or to say that we've restructured the program. We've agreed to fund a chief of police, a lieutenant, three sergeants, and 10 additional tribal officers. With a total of 15 tribal officers once fully staffed. Now that's, again, the funding for that is around $1.6 million thereabouts, which is a considerable amount of money. We feel like it's a necessary step in order to recruit and retain qualified officers here on the reservation. We're like we've talked about before, we're identifying and pursuing additional federal funds to help offset some of these costs. But in the meantime, we've committed tribal resources in order to ensure that we have the necessary foundation in place in order to begin to address some of these law enforcement issues. So again, this is a commitment that we've made. It's a top priority for the Tribal Council and the community. So we feel like we've taken some steps to really start to address some of these issues. So that's all I have related to Tribal Police Department. If there are any questions, now is the open forum portion of the meeting. You can ask questions that are related to some of the topics that we've addressed here today, or you can feel free to comment or address any of the other issues that we've raised.
On, but usually I have a bigger voice than that. A summary of this information that you've given out today, and the reason I ask for it is because it's garbled as it comes down to me. I picked up on that you're not you're disappointed in the sheriff, that the way that they're handling this thing, and what you are what you have come up with is that, do I understand that the tribal monies are going to pay for the number of police officers, captains, lieutenants, and so on? Is that true? Or is that going to come from federal government, federal money? Is that a grant? Or who is going to pay for the law enforcement that will be available to the people in the community?
Yeah, the way the budget breaks down is that we received a grant for around $212,000 that will...
$212,000, which you mentioned, much more cost than that.
Yep, $212,000 is one pot of money that we've identified. We also receive, through the annual funding agreement with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, law enforcement initiative dollars, thank you, which are funding source from the federal government. I think it's actually law enforcement initiative money started back when Bill Clinton was in office. It's grown some from the first funding agreement that we've actually received. It's roughly $300,000. We receive anywhere from 250 to 350,000 in contract support costs for our tribal security / police program. We also have...
Hillary Clinton isn't going to have her finger on that money.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I could offend somebody in here by saying yes, but I'm not sure. Hopefully, you know, President Clinton was a friend to Indian country. Whether or not, if it's Hillary, you know, I don't know. If the federal government at times is not really, you know, been on our side in a number of issues, but the Law and Order Act was something that President Obama had made a priority. He's committed a lot of different other recent VAWA, for instance, violence against women, reestablished tribal criminal jurisdiction over certain domestic violence cases, which those are positive steps. Those are things that you know, we will take advantage of. But to address the question that you had and the funding, There's additional funding that we've identified from the gaming revenue sharing money that we receive. It's $1.1 million every year we receive from the state government as a result of the compact we signed, the gaming compact we signed in 1999. Percentage of the money, or a portion of the money, roughly $300,000, was identified also in order to help fund the police program. We also identified through the funding agreement $150,000 from various programs to pay for, help pay for the dispatch services that we have there for the ambulance, the police, and the fire programs, as well as the wildland volunteer fire programs. And in order to balance the budget and cover the shortfall that we identified, in order to get to where we felt like the program that we've identified or have a vision for, we needed to find some additional money. What we're doing is using $210,000 from carryover, Bureau of Indian Affairs carryover funds that were identified in the police program from 2013, 14, and 15 have some carryover funds. And then we've also identified additional carryover monies through the compact funding agreement that we've identified as discretionary and will also be used to help support the law enforcement program. But when you rely on those...
So you're hopeful then that all of these pools of money will be able to be tapped to cover the program.
Yeah, that's...
And how many officers is it again that the Valley needs?
15. So we've got a chief of police, obviously, a lieutenant. We've got three sergeants, whereas before we had two. And we've identified nine additional officers. So 14 total.
Okay.
But the funding has all been identified within the tribal government. The sustainability of that program at that level is something that we will have to address, and that's why I mentioned, you know, there are a number of government staff that are working on identifying additional federal funds within the federal government system, for instance.
Okay, is that
Department
information on this little drive?
The specific information that's on the zip drive, I believe, will identify those sources of money, but it doesn't allude to the efforts that we are undertaking to identify additional funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Hello, Julia. Hi. Jury. So I was reading on Lost Coast Outpost that Jared Huffman brought in grants for law enforcement or something to that extent. It was $1.2 million for the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Have we received that money? Have we already spent that money? Is this going to the plan of the BIA training? What's going on with that money?
Okay. The $1.2 million, Congressman Huffman did offer a press release related to that. Congressman Huffman, appreciate him. We don't always agree, so sometimes it's to give him credit for certain things. We wrote those grants specifically to the Department of Justice. There were tribal people who submitted those, and they were funded. We appreciate Congressman Huffman's advocacy, if that's in fact what he did. But $1 million of the dollars, we received the grant award, and we've approved that through a tribal resolution. I can't tell you whether we've specifically gotten the money in at this point. We may or may not have, but it is forthcoming, and that's going to be used to address the problems with the tribal court building. So that project will be underway soon, from what I understand, speaking to tribal court staff. No, they're not interested in having temporary housing, and they're not interested in having facilities that don't meet their needs for on a number of different levels. So they are moving forward in rebuilding the tribal court, and we're thankful for the $1 million grant. That's, you know, something that we are proud of and look forward to receiving. Now, the additional $200,000 is a COPS grant, and it's in order to help assist the tribe in hiring two additional officers. The money can be used to pay for current officers or to help with the salaries of folks that we already have on staff. It can be used to either hire a new officer, or it can be used to identify a new recruit or somebody that you want to bring onto the force and send through the police academy. You know, the tribe and the police department have identified individuals who are interested in attending the police academy, and I think that's important for the community to have extra tribal officers who are from the community, are part of the membership, and will be out there representing us as officers. Now, there's also a secondary thing to that is that you're offering the training to the officers with the hope that obviously they'll stay here for a period of years, but there's also an opportunity for them to use the training that they have with a supposed certification or Indian Police Academy down in New Mexico to go ahead and further their careers. We've had a number of officers here who started within the organization, went through the post certification, ended up in some other agencies throughout the country, and have done a lot of positive things. So, Julie.
Button. Hello? Okay. Julia Gully, General Manager for Public Utilities District, and it's in that capacity that I want to speak to the membership today. So sorry to derail the tribal police discussion. I wanted to provide the membership with some information about one of their enterprises, specifically Public Utilities District, which is on the budget as a community service. Because this program affects so many, every resident in Hoopa if they get their water from the Public Utilities District, which many of us do. In the past, PUD has been a flourishing business and had at one point built up a $2 million reserve coffer based on their just revenue that they've been able to create over the last 10 or so years, maybe even longer. And over the same amount of time, there's been very little increases in individuals' water bills. And right now, what we find is that it costs somewhere around $600,000 to produce water and deliver it to individual residences' homes. And the revenue that we generate is a half of that, actually about $313,000. That's even with people's overages and so on. So what essentially has happened is Public Utilities has used their revenue that they've generated to subsidize individuals' water bills for you without you really knowing it. So they've taken any of their savings and done that for individuals. And also in the last couple of years, they've taken on some irrigation projects. What the former management said was a tribal council mandate, an unfunded mandate to a large degree. So a lot of those monies that the utilities used to have now goes towards, is gone because of irrigation line, somewhere to the tune of, on one grant, $500,000, so just about a half $1 million minimum has gone to install irrigation line for individuals. Now we're at the point where we have just 4 months of operating budget left, so we're planning on closing the doors essentially in 4 months. And the tribal council expressed concern of doing that because, we still have to deliver water to individuals, and how do we do that? So what they said was, okay, then how much does it take to actually provide water to individuals, and we'll subsidize that to some degree because we're afraid to raise water bills because in past years when we've had general meetings, the membership doesn't get fired up until you say you're going to raise their water bill. And then they come and they, in mass amounts, and advocate against it because they don't, you know, who wants to see their bills go up? So their concern is that if they raise water bills, then that they'll have this lashback from the community and no one will get reelected. So, you know, so you're using a business to try to influence politics and vice versa. You're using politics to influence business, and it's not good management, and that's what we've found now with public utilities. So we've, and the council also expressed concern is, okay, what if we don't need to do those other functions? So what if we don't need to put in new septics and don't provide new water service? All we want to do is get water to individuals. So then there's that option, too. Well, in the past, like I mentioned, construction and the revenues generated from construction has gone to pay for in everybody's water bill. So if you take out that construction component and you just say, we're not going to hire back the 8 jobs that were eliminated, and we're going to take the money that you saved from eliminating that one job at the dump, and we want to take all those monies now, and we're going to put those into individuals' water bills, and then we only want to subsidize PUD in partial just for the water component. So then you eliminate 2 administrative jobs, the general manager specifically, and the accountant. Then where do you find yourself with just a few water treatment guys who go out and try to repair leaks as well as treat your water? So that's just something that I want everyone to consider when it comes to a discussion that will most likely come up in the recent future about changing the water rates and about PUD's budget in general, and whether the tribal council decides just to subsidize water or all of operations until PUD can get back on its feet again.
Financial problems within that department when you arrived there. I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah. And so, you know, you're actually making the people pay for the water when it should have been watched by the council or somebody that was ahead of them, that water department, to make sure that they weren't going over their budget and doing things like they shouldn't be doing. And I think that's the problem. So if you want to watch something, that's what you need to watch, is those departments of what they do with the money.
I agree with you in partial, because part of it is PUD took their own money and spent it on irrigation projects. But the other part is people have never paid what it costs to deliver water to them. So if you wanted to pay for exactly what it costs to get just to get the water to you, your water bill would be $50 for the base rate, which is the normal rate. But other places, and PUD has time and time again been sanctioned because they say, well, why do you want a grant from us to pay for your water system when normally everywhere else the users pay for it?
From what we can ascertain, a lot of the funding was used to help to pay for the irrigation system and the installation of that, as well as, you know, what Julie is talking about is that those funds were used to offset the costs of maintaining the system and providing drinking water. There's no doubt about it that what it actually costs the public utilities district to deliver water isn't realized in the rates. That's just the reality of it. So so you say, well, what was the additional money spent on? The installation of the irrigation system is something that we've come to find out, you know, working with Julie and the folks in her financial department. We have some overruns. We have some issues there that we need to correct and adjust. But a majority of the costs come from lack of funding to pay for the delivery of the water and the maintenance of the system. And that's a direct result of the rates or the fees that are charged. And again, they're at $16 now. The information that will be provided in the budget says that there will likely be a $4 rate increase to $20 to help offset some of those costs. We are seeing where we're going to have a difficult time in balancing the public utilities district budget. We are still in the process of identifying the funds, identifying ways that we can provide water to the community. I mean, the number one priority, and I don't mean to keep you waiting, Stan, but is to deliver water. We can't not deliver water to the community. That is the priority. So how to cover the shortfalls, that's something that we're going to have to try and address. And again, in the budget document that was produced, it indicates in a footnote that there's likely going to be an increase of $4 to the rate. Myself personally, having been on the council now for a number of years, have been a part of proposals by the board of directors and the director to increase the rates over a period of 3 years, increase the rates at one time, have it raised for 1 or 2 years, and then taken back to the rate that which we started. And they've all been denied or declined. The tribal council has not had a willingness to increase the water rates. I myself personally have voted in favor of the increases each time because of what we're seeing today. There's just, I mean, yeah. Yeah, that's, again, all of these issues have come to the forefront, and all of the issues, they all need to be addressed, and they've all now, again, they're front and center, and we've gotten a better idea of the financial picture. We've gotten a better idea of what's going on with the irrigation system. We've gotten a better idea of now how do we address that. Again, the water treatment facility, for instance, is now at a critical stage of potentially collapsing and not being able to treat water. So we've reached out to Indian Health Services to help in addressing, you know, what the problems are there. As you know, and the rest of the community knows, there was an issue this last year of water being delivered into the tanks to be able to be delivered into the homes. And there were divers that came in, swam down into the system and determined that there are significant cracks in the, you know, the way in which the water gets into the facility. So those were unknowns to us. We have taken the necessary steps to address those issues as they become present. And we're also, again, like I said, reaching out to Indian Health Service and other agencies to try and figure out a solution to that issue on its own. I guess to get back to the overall issue of the public utilities district, the first priority is to deliver water, and that's what we're going to do. The second priority, I guess, if you will, is to identify the irrigation projects and the grants and the contracts that we have out there and our ability to perform those tasks and whether or not that's something that we are going to have to contemplate doing. Again, as more information comes forward, as we're able to put together, you know, documents and those types of things to better understand what's happening, better understand what some of the options are for the tribal council to move forward, we'll be able to make those decisions. And on top of that, you know, we're looking at ways in which you can produce additional revenue, if that is in fact something that we're interested in doing. Obviously, we know we have the transfer center there that does produce some profits for the organization. Is there a way that we can expand on that to maybe bring in additional dollars by means of potential increase in the cost of what it is to dump? I know it's quite cheap to go to the transfer center and dump your garbage. I know that much. Is there a room for a rate increase there? Is there room for, you know, applying a fee to folks who utilize the irrigation system now for free, yet we're incurring a tremendous amount of costs in order to install the system for folks? And it's, you know, it's across the gamut. It's non-Indian folks. It's Indian people. It's tribal people, you know, that rely on the irrigation system. So all of these things we are addressing. Again, it's another priority of the council to solve and move forward on.
So, but anyways, I wanted to speak on the tribal police matter. So when tribal police...
Use your mic. Jumps. Use your mic.
Is it working? Okay. When tribal police make a mistake, say, against a non-tribal member, who has to pay for it? I mean, does anybody have to pay for it? Or do we have to pay for it as tribal members? I mean, are we accountable to get sued? Or, I mean, you know, who has to pay for tribal police's mistakes? Like, last year, my father passed away, and rather tragically, and all of a sudden, and I went up the creek to cry so my kids wouldn't see me, you know, because my kids get scared they see their father cry. And I got a disturbing phone call from my children's mother saying that tribal police wanted us out of our house in 25 minutes. The chief of tribal police, nonetheless, at the time. So I pulled in over here to try to get a hold of a council member to try to ask what's going on. I just found out that the person I love most in this world, I was never gonna see in physical again. Let alone having my own tribe put me and my children out in the cold. Out of a house that I lived in for over 20 years. Out of a house that my dad had got out of jail on pass so he could give me the keys so I could live in there by myself when I was 13. Because I didn't have family to stay with or anything. People always ask me about my neighbors or whatever, but that's what they are to me. They're my neighbors. You know, and you guys could ask me about the whole water trip 5 or 6 years ago. I could have told you exactly what was going on with that. But but when I asked Bob Kane, who was the chief of police at the time, how is this legal? He couldn't tell me. When I turned to the Humboldt County Sheriff and I asked them, how is this legal? They said, well, this must just be some kind of laws that you guys have or something with your sovereignties that allows people to be put out in the cold like this. And small children, you know. My children were 3 and 4 years old at the time. They got up and had breakfast with their papa all the time. They seen him every day. All of a sudden, they didn't see him no more. And they were wondering where he was at. And then they have their own tribe, you know. My kids are 9/32nd blood quantum, and they're not their own cousins. That's not by mistake. That's by design. Because I was raised with a belief to keep the bloodlines going and keep the people going and to keep the bloodline diverse. And for my own tribe to do that to me, and then when I contacted various different attorneys, the attorney said my best chance would be to go at department heads, you know, like Human Services. They were there. You know, 3/4 of their entire staff was there, and these chairs lined up watching my children pack their own toys, pack their own stuff, being able to find one size of their own shoes. We just got $8,000 between me and Raven a couple days before that. We went and bought our children new clothes and everything. But since our house was ransacked looking for my father various times, we couldn't find our clothes. And when we were put out of our house like that, tribal police also allowed us to be robbed for everything we just had bought. You know, new TVs, new Blu-ray players. The first time I ever had a Blu-ray player, you know. I wonder how much works good for somebody. I never got to try it. You know, even our brand new microfiber towel set was taken. And that's all because tribal police put me and my kids out of our house, you know, with 25 minutes. My little girl had 3 brand new pairs of shoes. She had to wear one side of one shoe, one side of the other. The little bit of money I luckily had, I had to go towards motels to keep us out of the cold. But while we were at motels, people were robbing our house blind. Everything, all the memories. I had a camera, a digital camera with 2 8-gig memory cards. I bought one for each one of my children's birth. For my children, we both went through 2 hard pregnancies. We had to go to UCSF both times, come back and have my children at St. Joe's. You know, one memory card had each childbirth on there. And each memory card had specific pictures of that child with their grandpa. You know, I could care less about the camera. I wouldn't put out a $100 reward at every evil, terrible place in this valley, and I couldn't find it. Hundreds of pictures lost forever of my children and their papa. And my tribe put us out. And our tribal police put us out. So I've been trying to get a meeting, and, you know, with you, Ryan, and I haven't been able to get a meeting. I get Mr. Warrior Sanchez over here often. But I want to know, you know, why is sovereignty allowed to do that to a member? Why is sovereignty allowed to traumatize my children? Why is tribal police allowed to just do that to a family and to little kids without no repercussions, ramifications, or apologies, anything? How could we preach on child police being so good for the community when it's known to attack little children?
Not on. Okay. Just address Jumper. I don't know the specifics of exactly what happened. I just can say that. Go ahead, Marcel.
First of all, I'd like to make a comment regarding the PUD water situation. And knowing over the years that the past manager approached the councils a number of times over the years, the need to increase water rates and the issues there, am I missing this static? So, you know, those things have been addressed. I know that there was a comparison with neighboring communities, Willow Creek, Orleans, and the rates that people were paying there. I don't know whether we need to pay $50 a month, but I think that tribal members, we do need to realize that we need to pay more for the water, because this has been an ongoing problem that councils have not addressed in the past. And so that was the only comment I wanted to make. Regarding tribal police, I was at that meeting the other night, and I was discouraged with Sheriff Downey's attitude, or his perceived attitude, and because I believe that I, for one, would like to see the council actively pursue a memorandum of agreement with the sheriff's office. It is their responsibility to provide police protection here, but I also want to see a well-qualified, trained tribal police
because I think in the past 30 years it has proven that it is very important to our community. The relationship with tribal police, especially those that live here, the rapport and that they have with the community is very vital, and the role that they play. So I'm in very support of reestablishing tribal police to the level that it was before, and maybe to meet our needs. The other comment I guess I want to make is on the Rama decision and also the IHS Manisa Uyud coming down. On the Rama decision, is the tribal council working on a strategic plan? It looks like our buildings are falling apart. What about their infrastructure is a need, just as PUD is, you know, identifying those things, the water treatment programs that are treatment center that we need. Is there an active planning from the council on that will also seek tribal input on the possible uses of these monies, as well as with the IHS monies? I know that the Kamau board had been working on a strategic plan before. I agree that I think substance abuse is one of the top priorities that we should be addressing. But I also want to, I understand that the IHS monies or the contract support monies is based on the actual expenses that Kamau incurred over the years from 2006 on. It was monies that they should have had for operations. And I would like to see that money, or a good portion of that money, be used to improve our health systems. In regard to the conflict of interest, the only comment that I want to make, and I know that that's a major problem, but and in some of these departments where the director has family members working there, and usually there's a supervisor that oversees those, but still there could be a perceived conflict there because of the director being the ultimate boss and the overall of all of the managers. Although I wouldn't want to see a displacement of those people who are working, so I know that, I think, Ryan, you've addressed that, you know, if they are working and there is a conflict, it's not fair to put them out of jobs, whether they could be transferred to another or start addressing it, because it isn't being addressed as it is. So I think that's all I have. Thanks.
Offer a couple of comments, I guess. I think the first was on the increase of the water rate. Again, we have had that discussion a number of times. It seems pretty evident we're going to have to do something or continue to run into these types of problems. As far as the police and the MOU, no, that's the Cadillac, if you will, of jurisdiction for the tribe. Obviously, that's not. We didn't want to see it go away. There's, you know, discussions with the sheriff over a number of months, and trying to keep it in place, and trying to get to a point where we could negotiate a new agreement, because we understand, you know, that he's interested in a new agreement. The agreement that he's put forward and mentioned it the other night is just a drastic departure from what we've seen, and that's not, you know, the council's not going to agree to that, or we may, but the indications that I have received is that's not a route that we want to go down. But at the same time, you know, we do understand that's what we need, that the agreement with the sheriff is something that we have to have in place that provides for, I think, the best ability for our tribal officers to address the law enforcement issues here, or the issues of crime on the reservation, and that really is our goal. And from our perspective, it's the beginning steps are putting a budget in place that can help us to recruit and retain qualified officers. And absent of doing that, we'll have a hard time. Because now, as Vice Chairman mentioned it at the meeting the other night, you know, we're in a really difficult position. And whether we've put ourselves in that position or the sheriff has put us in that position by taking himself out of the agreement in attracting officers. You know, for all intents and purposes today, all that we have with our two guys that are there are tribal security officers. And in order for our program to bring highly trained officers or post-certified officers or any other type of law enforcement trained individual, there has to be something else other than the attraction of coming to work as a security guard. You know, if you're a cop, for instance, or a police officer, former military for that matter, it's unlikely that you would come to work for the tribe in that capacity. So that's why we're exploring the federal criminal MOU, or deputization agreement, and also addressing the budget issues that we all know are there, that our officers, or we can't compete as tribal officers with even the Yurok tribe or the Humboldt County Sheriff, and certainly not the, you know, California Highway Patrol and any of those other agencies. So we think that is the first step. Also getting liability coverage for our officers through federal tort claims or some other mechanism. You know, we also see that as an issue. But the goal is to reestablish an MOU with the county sheriff. We've also entertained or explored, you know, amending state law in order to directly recognize tribal police officers as state peace officers, as opposed to having to go through the deputization agreement process, where depending on the politics of the day, we may or may not have an agreement. I mean, Sheriff Downey seems to be prejudiced in some of the things that he does, some of the things that he says, and the way in which, I mean, if you look at the meeting the other night, and his communication to the tribal members was really condescending, and you know, if that's who we have to negotiate with or try to come to an agreement with, and he has all of these feelings in place, that's going to be rather difficult. So the idea is if we can have some state legislation or even some federal legislation to address tribal officers as state peace officers, that's something that we're going to explore as well. I think it was 2001, and there was a bill that was introduced. It was Senate Bill 911 that had gained some significant traction, but there were issues associated with, in fact, the county sheriffs or sheriffs association that were opposed to it. So, and they're a really powerful union, and that's something that we're going to have to deal with, as well as the other liability issues. But yeah, we're trying to do as much as we can over a short period of time to address the state law, really, is what it comes down to. The federal stuff, obviously, we're going to have that in a short period of time, but it's the state law is what is most concerning. You should follow up just quickly. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, Leanne is right. It's Ryan Sundberg, Supervisor Sundberg is our representative out here. He works directly with the county sheriff. Obviously, he's always lets himself off the hook by saying that, you know, the sheriff's an elected official, and you know, really only power he has is in the budget. And of course, they're not going to cut the police budget because they don't have an agreement with the tribe. But at the same time, you know, that's really where we need to go if on that local level to persuade the sheriff to at least be reasonable. I mean, we're not even talking about, I mean, he doesn't even, the agreement that he has proposed is just, it's really not even something that we have put much serious consideration into. So, but that, I think, would be, like Leanne suggests, that would be one place we can go. Quickly, though, you had talked about the settlement funds. We are in the process of planning for how those funds are going to be used. I think we're still trying to gather information from Tom and other sources about what exactly exactly they can be used for or can't be used for. I've indicated myself personally that I would certainly be interested in sitting down with the Kamau Medical Center and developing, and I think we had talked to Glenna about it before, a plan on how to utilize those funds. Obviously, community input is going to be important into that. What I think is important for the community or the healthcare system or delivery of healthcare, might not be important to other folks. So yeah, we are going to go through that process. I think what the Tribal Council has said and done and tried to do is to get the budget out of the way, get that passed, and that would free up some time for us to be able to focus on some of these bigger policy-related issues, the settlement stuff, PUD, tribal forestry and the fire program, and what may or may not happen there. So we certainly have an interest in sitting down and talking about an overall plan for those funds.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Leanne Estrada. So to Julie's help there, politics in our valley basically influences every entity within this tribal structure. The politics are what enables the stagnation instead of the growth. Infrastructure development has been an issue for decades, and it's something that we need to do now. I mean, it's simple. If that money can be used for that, that would be an alternative. Back to the law enforcement situation, I'm disheartened by the current status of our current law enforcement program. I'm not happy that we're now under the thumb of Sheriff Downey. I wish that we had requested federal intervention back in January of this year and not wasted 8 months to do so. If we're truly advancing toward federal intervention, why do we need to focus so hardly on re-entering an agreement with Sheriff Downey that he in no way wants to continue? He's not interested in continuing the agreement, and he's been open about that since 2010. We need specialized training for our officers, and that in many ways exceeds the training that they receive at our local CR Academy. The current training that the officers receive is military-based and terrorist-influenced. Training also means keeping records and data, filing adequate reports, doing the basics, or basically what we failed to do, I'd say even in the last 10 years. It took many, many years for our law enforcement program to reach the lows that it is in now. Denial of the problems, as I have continued to experience, will not benefit our future officers or our community. We must fix the problems, not cover them up. Bob Kane conveniently resigned, not retired, instead of facing the issues and denying the problems. Can we provide special training above and beyond the regular status quo? Sheriff Downey sat back and waited for the time to pounce and pull out of the agreement instead of stepping up beginning in 2010 when he took office to begin to address our weaknesses. The incident that took my son Richie Estrada's life was basically what broke the camel's back, and the positive changes that have occurred since December 18, 2014 in our tribal law enforcement, Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, and the CHP programs for the failures of the public safety agencies at not responding to my 911 calls. Ryan Sundberg stated on Wednesday at the sheriff's meeting in Willow Creek to contact him for any information that we have, any ideas. The meeting in Willow Creek was completely the opposite of what happened in Hoopa. It was like it was a whole different world. His demeanor was different. The people were different. It was completely different. I wish we had had videotape of that evening so you could see and remember the smirks on his face as he made comments. The Willow Creek meeting was videotaped, and both Maggie Fleming and Ryan were in attendance. He shared information of all of the funding that they are currently receiving, and all of these wonderful services that we're going to receive in northeastern Humboldt County. I spoke a few times in the meeting regarding infrastructure of our need for mental health services and for substance abuse services, because the Willow Creek community has none. And their denial, you know, of those problems doesn't help them either. My other issue right now is under the animal control ordinance that we have as a tribe. Neuter Scooter is going to be here in Hoopa October 24th and 25th, and I suggest everyone grab either one of your animals or a neighbor's animal and bring them in. They have vouchers available. It's not 100% free, depending on your need. There are sometimes individuals there that can assist with scholarships just because they care. There's an organization in Arcata that is currently planning on getting a grant for a mobile unit that's going to be coming to the area. And they're very interested in working with our current animal control policies. So I would really like to see some movement in that area also. Thank you. The 24th and 25th. No, this month. October.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Okay. Councilman Marshall wants to offer some comments. This is on. So I did also attend that meeting. I ran out from another meeting as quick as I could get up there, and I would say that the demeanor was completely different than it was in Hoopa. The chief of police there was sitting down the vast majority of the time, communicating, interacting. As soon as Hoopa was mentioned, he stood up and the demeanor did change. Ryan Sundberg was there. I did make a comment openly, publicly, where I mentioned it was great seeing Ryan there. I wish I had seen him in Hoopa as well. And he gave a reason why. Maggie Fleming was also there. And that took me by surprise that those two would show up in a Willow Creek meeting, that when you looked at the overall numbers of what Hoopa had compared to what Willow Creek had in their attendance, it was vastly different. I think Willow Creek had maybe, 30 people or not even that much. It was just 18 people compared to what Hoopa had, but yet they showed up for that meeting. The portion that I caught and what struck me was that it seemed that Willow Creek was going to get the vast majority of services, that they were coming out to be in Willow Creek to help Willow Creek. Hoopa was a secondary, if anything. I mean, we weren't even mentioned in it. So I was very disappointed with that. I did chat with Sundberg about that afterwards. And also the following day followed up with him and sent him the link for Joe Roscoe's broadcast of the Hoopa meeting so he could listen to it. I also told him that during the Hoopa meeting there was a couple of lies that I caught Donnie in. I did call him out on one, and I figured it wasn't worth it on the second one, which was basically the decommissioning of our law enforcement, which was never what we were asking for. We were always asking for help. So looking at the two, I was very disappointed with what I seen. I think that we're the redhead stepchildren in this case with him, and I don't think it's necessarily something that we're going to get a lot of help or support from. Yeah, and just on one thing on the animal control ordinance, you know, what I think hinders us the most, obviously we have the animal control ordinance in place. You know, there are procedures for stray dogs or whatever the case may be, you know, animals that are being abused. What hinders us the most is the lack of a shelter, you know, somewhere for us to actually either take the animal or do something about what may or may not be occurring. Sure. Yeah, I know the organization had actually come forward and the tribe identified land for a shelter or for, you know, the development of something that would help to address the issue. So, yeah, we're hearing it more and more. And you have a lot of people who are talking about it. It is a concern. In fact, we were touring the schools yesterday with the superintendent and some of the staff folks from the different congressional offices, and you know, there's a dog was there on campus, and you know, he was ill, and you think, gee whiz, I mean, that's, you just kind of come to expect it, and maybe we shouldn't. So
you're right.
Anyways,